Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Veritas. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Ransomware has emerged as one of the most insidious cybersecurity threats yet. Federal agencies in both the civilian and defense sides of the government have been working steadily to mitigate that threat. For an update on how one crucial DoD agency is handling it, I spoke with Navy Rear Admiral Brian Hurley, director of the Joint Service Provider, and David Smith, Cybersecurity Center Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Hurley answers the first question. Ransomware is often thought of as a consumer area or commercial type of threat, and we haven't had many instances that I'm aware of where federal agencies or DoD have been hit with ransomware. So how does DISA look at it? How do you regard it? How do you deal with it just to keep that threat that far away?
Tom, first off, thank you and for this opportunity to speak on behalf for DISA and also the Joint Service Provider here in the Pentagon. But we constantly are aware of the environment that's going on around us. Part of that is that aptitude that we need to have to always be ready. We stand a 24/7 watch. We provide that support to the most attacked entity in the world. And so ransomware is a concern because it's the aptitude or the ability for malicious actors to use that aggressively in our domain. So it is, General Nakasomi talked a bit about command and control. General Nakasomi is cybercom. He is a four-star responsible for that. He reports and provides guidance up to Secretary of Defense and also even further beyond in his other hats. But we work with JFQ Doden, which is his defensive side, which is run by Lieutenant General Robert Skinner. And he has a dual hat at DISA, and we are part of DISA. So that command and control and that knowledge of what's happening real time is imperative. I can tell you in my time, short time here of over a little over 2 years, it has been very successful in improving our responsiveness to these type of things. So the event that happened with ransomware recently has we were on board and ready to go off and respond to the events real time and go off and do that. I have with me David Smith, who is the lead of my cybercom, and he can share a little bit about that responsiveness and the 1,000 attacks we get on a daily basis and how we respond to that.
David? Mr. Smith, take it away.
Yes. Thank you. Again, thank you for this great opportunity. So as you know, DoD is a very unique, you had mentioned consumer. And so one of the first thing we do is the prevention side of the house, which is situational awareness training and make sure that our people are trained to identify and react and report accordingly. And additionally, we have training exercises to include not only the situational awareness and identifying, but also the response mechanisms. For instance, myself and a very dedicated team of cybersecurity professionals know exactly what assets are in our environment, and we know exactly which ones are vital to the role, and we know which ones to bring up first based on impact. So those are the type of training we do, not only for the situational awareness, but also for the responsiveness.
And let me ask you just an organizational question, because the armed services each have their own cyber operations. And then, as you mentioned, there's Cyber Command, and then there's DISA as a shared services provider for cross DoD. And then you've got CISA over from Homeland Security that is also providing patchwork and cybersecurity advice across government, and I guess it gets to DoD. So how do you fit into that whole widespread apparatus from the DISA standpoint, which, you know, as a major cloud and other services provider, you're interacting with almost everybody in DoD, even if indirectly?
Well, you're spot on, Tom. Part of that effort that we have ongoing is that command and control. That coordination across Cyber Command, JFQ Doden, DISA, CISA, NSA, all that feeds into that methodology that David just talked about to go off and effectively do that. We provide a 24/7 watch and that boundary level security, but there's also outside boundaries that are protecting. Most of the time, those assets that you talked about for ransomware or those events that hurt, they are blocked at that outer boundary. Some of them can get through, and then David's team responds to those and also blocks at that level. But we're not going to sit back and just say, hey, we're doing a great job. If you ever watch football and you see after Tom Brady comes off the field, he pulls his iPad out and he's looking at the defense and he's evaluating. That is every day, every minute by this team that is looking at that to get quicker response time and capability. So there is no halftime wait and kick back. It is a constant campaign to get up to speed and effective in this domain. General Nakasomi said that specifically up to the Congress. He says, we are at combat level in this domain on a regular basis. We are aware of that and we're doing that. And so any additional comments, David?
I would just say, sir, one good example is we have what we call, we refer to it as the war room. And what that is when we have an incident, whatever that might be, even if it's to support an Afghanistan mission or whatever the case may be, we have a task force. We have a collaborative means to where we set up war room for urgent matters. And therefore we talk to CISA, Department of State, nation actors, as far as stakeholders based on this particular thing, to your point. Doden, for example, for us is one of our, is equivalent to say CISA in the federal spectrum outside of DOD. So we have a very good relationship with them and very good ways of setting up these war room type environments. And we're very trained for real world events as well.
And if someone were to click on something somewhere and there is a occurrence and you can, with your network operations center, can see that there's something going on that people are trying to get their hold of data. Do you have a playbook? Do you have a plan of action that you rehearse? And maybe tell us a little bit about what the reaction looks like.
Well, first off, Tom, what's interesting is you talk about, David talked about the training and effectiveness that we give to our customer base and our employees and everything. I don't know how many times in my short duration here that I've gotten email saying, this email looks suspicious. That phishing or whatever technique, and it immediately comes to us and we take action on it to go off and effectively do it. If there's an inadvertent clicking, David's team will go off and take action to quarantine, resolve, and clear out that domain, and they're tracking it. But sometimes, this is the point I was talking about, that layer defense, it gets through and they get into the backfield and they maybe cause a sack on the quarterback. But we adjust effectively. And so, David, do you have anything else to add to that, sir?
I would say that, first of all, we have high standards in our hiring practices. So, for instance, if you're a cybersecurity professional, you would have to have CISSP or our different levels of nationally recognized certifications in order to perform your job. So that's number one. Additionally, we have those playbooks. We rehearse them constantly. So it's more than quarterly. We rehearse them all the time. And anytime we have a new hire, we walk them through with a more expert level person that kind of does a left seat, right seat, right. Okay, we've showed you how to do the playbook. Now it's your turn. And then we'll simulate. And then we have, at least double blind training periodically to make sure that both parties know what they're doing without anyone being in the know. So that's kind of the way that's one part of our playbook.
And I mentioned if someone clicks on something, so that's one attack vector is classical phishing, which is getting more sophisticated. I think right. Admiral Hurley mentioned that there's lots of emails that come in that look suspicious day by day. But then there's also old-fashioned hacking, which can also lead to the data. What do you find is the, especially in the ransomware area, the more common vector? And what do you do about the other vector that's not someone clicking on phishing, but just simply trying to hack in?
There's a part of that, Tom, is the constant training that we give to people. So it is not only on our side, but it's a training to all our people, administrators and everything else, to be on the aware and the lookout for those type of events. And it's not stagnant training. like David was talking about, we are dynamically adjusting to that domain for whatever level they can do it. And it has showed benefits, like I talked about them doing it, but associated with that one, that's that layer defense at some three-letter agencies that provide that outbound security. And then additionally, the CyberComm and DoDIN. But I can't tell you how many emails I get at a classified level that talk about that threat vector, that we go off and reach out to different people to talk about where that threat vector is coming from and adjust accordingly for what they call today a zero-day event. But there are some additional efforts that go underway that David can talk about, because his team is a 24/7 watch that is actively looking at that vector on a regular basis. David?
Sir, part of the playbook is not only for our trained professionals, but also for our user community. For instance, if they were to click on that, it's very important that they know that needs to be reported. So we've put mechanisms, and that's part of their playbook as well. So even our user community has extensive training on how to report, who to report to, and the urgency in which it needs to be reported. And then my team does a good job of containing it. For instance, that's our main fish in once it's in the environment, is to contain it and reduce the impact. There's several ways that we can do virtual LANs, and there's several ways to contain it in within the architecture. So that takes a lot of planning, preemptive planning, if you will, to help us with our defense in depth that the Admiral had mentioned earlier. But the key is having a strong, very trained end user base, consumer, and a response team. And I think DoD does a very good job of doing that. And I think I'll put us up against anyone in the world as far as our ability to do that.
Navy Rear Admiral Brian Hurley, Director of the Joint Service Provider, and David Smith, Cybersecurity Center Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Whether you're migrating to the cloud, from the cloud, or between clouds, protecting your data and ensuring business continuity are critical priorities. Veritas can help you build a unified multi-cloud strategy with resiliency at its core to help ensure strategic and mission-critical decisions. Our enterprise data services platform is designed to give government agencies the confidence and control to transform, protect, and optimize your multi-cloud. Visit veritas.com/government for more information.
Welcome back to our interview with Navy Rear Admiral Brian Hurley, Director of the Joint Service Provider, and David Smith, Cybersecurity Center Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Our topic is strategies for dealing with the ransomware threat. Let's delve for a moment into the idea of data protection, because in the case of ransomware, the object is money out of the organization. But sometimes they want the data, or at least if they want the money, they use the data to get the money. And so that gets to the idea of data backup, data recovery, data protection, and also knowing and having visibility into your data assets. So let's start there. DISA has command of a lot of computing resources. What are your general strategies for making sure you have visibility into everything that's sensitive, that could be subject to ransomware?
Part of that starts with access control, Tom. It's knowing who is accessing. So part of that background that we just talked about is his team is looking at user methodology. So if somebody signs in as you and they start going down different paths, that gives them alert for inappropriate actions that are occurring by a user name. So it's controlling the access. So Tom, you might log in on your computer and just use a password. For us, we have dual authentication for almost everything, and we have to go through those processes to get through there. So it's verifying who you are. It's going to even get better with zero trust capability, where it's going to take a look at what you're doing and how you're doing. And so, yeah, David talked about we're the best, but we know we always have to improve, and we're out there improving. And so part of that improvement is controlling the access to need to know basis on that, on whatever the material is that is there in the database. So it's not everybody has access to the database. It's only those people that are authorized, and it's controlling that access to that database to make sure that it's the right person doing the right thing. David, did I miss anything, or you want to add something?
Sir, I think you captured the main points there. I would just say that additionally, we make sure we have endpoint protections that will alert our team if there's anything that looks out of the ordinary as far as the size of the data being. And then we have blocking mechanisms. Additionally, we have encrypted mechanisms. So even if it were to make it out, it would not be useful to our adversary. So those are the type of things. But the Admiral talked about our main thing that has been very effective, which is that two-factor authentication least privilege.
Yes, in many ways, then, if you have those mechanisms in place, then bots or automated types of attacks simply won't work because they don't have, even potent as they might be, they don't have the credential that carries them into the network towards the data. Fair enough?
Correct, sir.
All right. And getting back to the idea of data recovery, data backup, and data management, because if something should become corrupted in some way, you don't want to back up the corruption. And so how do you work data management into the general scheme of cyber protection?
The data management, usually we have multiple different places that we maintain it and recover it from. But it's also, as you can imagine, into the cloud, there are some places up there in protection of that as well as you look at it. If it is constrained or accessible, we control that to the best ability that they have, but they're constantly looking at how to improve how that can get backed up and effectively used. But in some cases, it needs to be quarantined, like David talked about, and then they go through and they clean that out and remove out the threats before they can go off and recover it completely. David, any additional points that you want to bring out in that coordination?
I would just say that, basically it's all about asset inventory. So we determine what's more vital to our operation as far as data goes. We determine what's acceptable as far as loss of data, worst case scenario, or if the answer is zero, in other words, not 1 minute of data can be lost, then we have to, have fault tolerance and remote journaling, et cetera, to where we don't lose any data. And as far as the corruption part, that's based on, obviously, we would work encryption into our backups as far as the keys and all that stuff. And then we would basically encrypt to the last known point of good data. But it's all based on how we define its criticality to our operation is how what level of backup of that data we would invest resources into.
And what do you require of your cloud suppliers? Because DISA has evolved over the years from the mega center operator, where everything is totally under a government door, and now you are kind of the cloud broker for the federal government. And so cloud providers have a role in all of this as well. What are some of the, besides meeting FedRAMP and the proper, specifications, what do you really require of them operationally, and what do you tell them face-to-face?
Part of that interface, Tom, is with the DISA engineers and interaction with either Azure for Amazon and then also Microsoft, is coordinating with them to make sure that they meet that FedRAMP requirement at different levels. So you have FedRAMP might be as similar to IL5 or 6 and some of that other terminology, but that is defining what the requirements are for accessibility into there. And then part of that command and control that we talked about, they're embedded as part of that to improve that connectivity and reaction. So there's not probably any given day that DISA or DODIN and us are feeding back to Microsoft on improving that environment. And same with Amazon or any other vendor who is providing that cloud mentality. There is controlled access in some of the specialized areas where it is specified in where they maintain that cloud. The cloud is not open in the air, but it's actually retained in certain buildings around the world. And they control access into those buildings as well as access into the other stuff. So it is part of those agreements and stuff like that, and making sure that that access is controlled to that level. And part of that is encryption boundaries and stuff like that, but it's accessible. And so DISA has cloud access points that are maintained, and we leverage those to access into that cloud environment to make sure that coordination. It has, I can tell you this, the improvement of having the cloud and the quickness and responsiveness has improved the customer environment in the operation side, but we're still hardening and defending and taking a look at how to go off and get better at how we manage that so that the customer doesn't care about all that background, but we care about it daily. I think that's how we approach for that environment in the cloud as we migrate between either on-premise, on-site with some of that, or up in the cloud for accessibility. Hopefully that answered the question, Tom.
Yeah, and I imagine the cloud providers also from their commercial sides or from their lower level security sides must get a lot of intelligence about what's going on out there in the wild. And is there generally feedback from them to say, Admiral Hurley, we've got this going on, you might want to be aware of this because it's hitting commercial entities and so on?
Oh, yes, sir. And part of that ransomware you talked about, we were fed part of that from the civilian side quickly. Some of the zero-day actors that are out there that are assessing and seeing what's out there and what activities are going out there, either on the black web or real time, that is being fed back through CyberComm, Doden, and other actors. And that coordination of command and control has been very effective. So, you know, years ago, it would take us months to respond to something. You know, when I got here, it was weeks. It's down to days. And soon, you know, when we get there on a criticality ones, it's within a day or less to respond to those activities on a 0-day event.
And David, I wanted to ask you about a technology trend that might affect the idea of cybersecurity and how you are aware of all the assets. And that is, you know, as virtualization has given way to containerization of workloads, or maybe you have both types of workloads running and they're scattered in multiple instances throughout the clouds, that multiplies the problem in some sense of what assets you're trying to protect. How do you make sure that you know all of the instances that are containerized that might be spun up, spun down? I mean, it's a dynamic situation relative to how applications used to be run on a mainframe.
I'll be honest, there has to be, it comes with a trained, knowledgeable workforce. At the end of the day, you use trusted agents that would be able to spin up, you know, provision and deprovision. And I can't, like you had said, you must empower to satisfy operational requirements. So the key is making sure that the people that you do entrust with that level know what exactly they're doing and certainly know exactly the impacts globally, impacts of your assets, not only to our operation, but to Doden operation and other DOD and in some cases federal task force. So you've got to make sure that they're in the know if you're going to give that level of power. But ultimately, it's all about trusted agents. But you certainly could not empower every person to have that ability to provision and deprovision assets.
And that's Navy Rear Admiral Brian Hurley, Director of the Joint Service Provider. You also heard from David Smith, Cybersecurity Center Chief at the Defense Information Systems Agency. They were talking about ransomware. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Veritas on Federal News Network.